This is a KUNV Studios original program.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
You're listening to There's No Aging in Vegas, a one-stop shop for all things positive aging in the Vegas Valley and any place within ear's reach. This show features topics relevant to adults 50 and over that help them live their lives to the fullest. Listeners will meet a variety of residents who've taken the reins of aging and are willing to share their tips and tools for creating a positive mindset and lifestyle. We're starting now. Everybody, welcome to There's No Aging in Vegas. And you know why? Because we're too busy living and loving life. I am so happy. This is the third episode. The last episode with Dr. Whitfield, president of UNLV, was awesome. It was really nice to have somebody in the studio who kind of matched me on, I mean, he's way more degrees than I'll ever have, but just matched me on my knowledge of aging and the different things that go along with that. So that was really, really cool. And I want to say something really quick because it just dawned on me, that music you just heard that you were all bopping your heads to, my son wrote that. He has a college degree in music, and finally I got something back. I got a song. I'm so happy. But anyway, my son's name is Oliver. Thank you, Oliver. Sounds fantastic. Now, I got some emails after the last show, couple of shows, and I thought that I would just kind of bring them to your attention. No hate here. I'm transparent. But I actually got asked my age, and I'm pretty open about it. It's definitely on my social media and things. But I am 69, and I will be 70 in a few months. So there's that. I also got asked, let me do my fan here. Woo! I also got asked, or I was told more or less, that I was kind of shiny, probably because it was so hot in here. And that I might get a makeup artist to, like we're at NBC or something, to come over and do my makeup. But in the words of Lizzo, I will say, if I'm shiny, everybody's gonna shine. So I'm just gonna keep on shining. I don't wear makeup. I never have in my whole life, so I'm not gonna start now. And then everybody asked, where do you teach? Because I mentioned that. I teach at Ollie right here at UNLV. And more information on that is certainly available at patlandakeragency.com. So there you go. There was more, but I limited it to so I could make it through the show without hurt feelings or anything like that. Anyway, every show we have a 5-minute segment with AARP, and today is no exception, and we have a fabulous guest with us today. Her name is Janice Alpern, and she's going to share a program that she's been a part of for a long time with AARP called Cinemaniacs. Hey, Janice.
Hey, Pat. Thanks a lot for having me today.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad that you could make it. I know we had to kind of work around a few things, but I'm certainly glad that you're here. Now, tell me a little bit about you. How long have you been volunteering for AARP?
Well, I retired 18 years ago, and I've been volunteering with AARP in various areas since then, ever since then. And the latest is the Cinemaniacs group, and we're 10 years old next month.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. And this group was formed, I know that movies and things like that go well with aging. You know, the nostalgia of them and the way they make us feel and different things like that. How did this get started, the Cinemaniacs group?
Well, wherever I've worked in the past, everyone knows I'm a real movie buff. And we used to go to the film every weekend, even when we lived overseas. And one time when I was volunteering One of the members, one of the staff members, asked if I would be interested in leading a movie group for our members. And, of course, I jumped at the idea. And that was probably December 2013, and it took a while to get us organized. But starting on April the 1st, 2014, we had our first meeting. And it's a movie group where we would discuss films. I just want to tell you one quick thing. This is our mission statement, and it will tell you more what we're doing here. To offer our members a diversity of thought-provoking films intended to stimulate discourse and learning. And that's just what we try to do.
Wow, that's fantastic. And so how many people are in this group?
We have a mailing list of active members of about 50, mm-hmm. and we can have anywhere from 18 to 25 at a meeting. But just to give you an idea, at our last meeting in February, we had 7 new members.
Well, that's fantastic. So it's kind of still being discovered, probably as you put these events on. And I know that one of the major events you do is around the Oscars. Unfortunately, this show won't air until after the Oscars have aired. But you actually sit and you watch movies and then you figure out which one might win the Oscar?
That's about right. We see the films individually. We go on our own. We don't go as a group. But I select 5 films and show the trailers at every meeting, and then the group votes on which 3 films they wish to see. These movies are from the theater or are streaming on Netflix. And then we have an Oscar ballot contest every year.
Wow.
And
so you guys pick, and then somebody wins, whoever got the most winners or picked the winner?
That's exactly it, yes.
Wow. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, you know, every time I do something with AARP, I learn something new that AARP does. I mean, I went to a conference in Atlanta a couple of years ago, an aging conference, and AARP was so present in so many ways. I mean, what they're involved in. One of the things that really surprised me was how deep they are in the Native American aging experience. In the Native American gay experience, in the Native American, I mean, it was just endless. And that's just one little faction. So it doesn't surprise me that we have a Cinemaniacs. Now, are we the only one here in Nevada?
As far as I am aware, we are the only ones in Nevada, and we are the only ones in all the states in America. I don't know what it is. We've talked about it enough, but I guess folks are just busy doing other things of which we headline, so to speak, fraud and caretaking.
Oh my goodness, it's really endless. I've had 2 other people on that have talked about things, and I was just kind of surprised. I mean, they did a Cupid's crew or something and went around and gave roses and candy and things out at different senior facilities, which I think is fantastic. But I'm looking here at what you gave me, and just really briefly, so you have these screen bites. What is that?
Screen Bites is a segment that I lead, and we talk about upcoming films. And, you know, they haven't even gone into production half the time. So I do research constantly on what's coming out. This year doesn't seem to be a really exciting year because of the strike last year, but I'm looking forward to what's coming up is Wicked. Wicked with Ariana Grande mm-hmm. is a production in the UK, and that will be broken up into 2 films. And it's with Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo, and mm-hmm. it will come out, I believe, in November this year, and next year it will come out in December. It's going to be a fantastic musical.
Well, Janice, you are like movie phone. We could just call you and get all the scoop broken down. I think that's fantastic. And it's a really best kept secret. I mean, because I think if more people, and hopefully now more people will know about Cinemaniacs and get involved. You know, so many people that are sitting at home thinking, oh, there's nothing to do. And then here you guys are out there doing these amazing things. But Cynthia, I really want to thank you for sharing the AARP 5-minute segment with all of us. And I look forward to meeting you. I'm sure I'll meet you somewhere out there in the AARP world. And again, just thank you for taking time to call in and share your knowledge with us.
Once again, thank you so much for letting us share our knowledge. You have a great day.
Okay.
And thank you.
Thank you, Janice. And anybody who's interested in that, you know, please, that information is available at aarpnv.org. So you can get involved. And trust me, there's more. You're going to be shocked at all the things that AARP has out there. We're just not really aware of those things. So, again, thank you, Janice. And now, I guess that we will get into the meat of this show with my guest. I didn't put him on the spot. Sometimes I bring in people yakking about something else, and they're like, wait, I didn't know you were going to ask me that. But we didn't do that today with Mike, my guest, Mike Denny.
Denny.
Okay. Italiano. Che cosa fa? But anyway, I was so excited to have you here because I love the Neon Museum, and that's where you do your thing. Tell me, what do you do at the Neon Museum?
Well, Pat, I'm pleased to be here. Thank you very much for having me on the show. So at the Neon Museum, I'm the Director of Communications and Marketing. So I'm handling all of the public relations sides of things and making sure the executive director is getting out in the media and discussing what the museum is up to, and then obviously doing the marketing and getting that side of our story out so folks come to visit us.
Well, I know you kicked the doors open of the Circa, and that was pretty awesome. And so why did you leave there? Did you not, you just got tired, or there was nothing else for you to create, or no more vision? What happened?
I'll tell you, we'll step back. I mean, I spent technically 60 years in the casino industry. I was born into casinos. My family has a small casino in Northern Nevada, and that's where we grew up.
And you were born in a casino.
I was born in there. Yeah,
wow.
I mean, both, you know, steps away from there, but a small town in Yerington, Nevada, is where it is. And you know, we were part of a family business, and we learned all of the things that it take to run a casino, from operations, from cleaning and maintenance and janitorial and bartending and cooking. I mean, we ran the whole gamut, and I also learned, you know, how to deal and how to market. And working in a family business made me a great marketer, I think,
yeah,
because I understood that what it takes to work for a family and take that, you know, beyond where I was in that world.
Well, too, I guess marketing for a small business or a family business, you got to be good at marketing, because you have to concept all of that stuff yourself. It's not like, you know, you have something to tap into that's happening externally, you know, and I would imagine that was pretty tough to figure out. Now, were all the people in your family a part of the marketing team, or did that just kind of fall on you?
No, I mean, we were all part of that team. I was young when I left the business. I have three older brothers, and two of them took over the business from my father. So I was about 24 when I left that world and went to Reno and went back to college, mm-hmm, and studied journalism and public relations. But I continued on in the casino marketing world because it was part of me and what I enjoyed most.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the reason I mentioned Circa is because that's where I first saw you. Even before I knew Rob, I saw your picture and something you had on the, you know, fancy, or maybe Rob did. I'm not sure. Somebody had on a beautiful brocade jacket. It's probably Rob.
Yeah, no, it was actually me.
Was that you?
But it's generally him, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I just thought, wow, look at this guy. And then when I read who you were and everything, and then with the advent of Circa and just all the bling and bang behind it, and it was just so new and different, and owning that corner. And I'm just curious, like, when you realized that you were going to be marketing Circa, I mean, were you nervous? I mean, because, you know, the first resort, downtown resort in ages, I mean, how How did you manage that?
I was actually very excited by the prospect of being able to bring something to life in Las Vegas, to bring something that major, you know, really to the part of the city that continues to grow and expand and blow things up. And it really came down to working very closely with the owners of Circa. They're very genuinely great men, and their family. And they gave us a lot of leeway to be able to bring that property to life.
Well, you certainly did bring it to life. I can tell you that.
But, Pat, it was really an effort by everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take all the credit. I there was a lot of people that were behind that from every concept.
Yeah, no, I have no doubt about that. It's just that you were in all the pictures. No, I know that. But okay, so then, you end up at the Neon Museum, which who doesn't love the Neon Museum? I mean, the Boneyard, the home of the past of Las Vegas, is living over at the Neon Museum. What took you there? I mean, it is a bit different. Yeah, it's still all the bling and the signs and the lights, but it's very different from that corporate,
I had made a conscious effort to retire after Circa. I figured that was kind of the pinnacle of my career. I had opened this property. It was very successful. And so I stepped back, and that lasted about 2 months before before I went, this isn't working out for me. I didn't know what to do with myself. I love the garden. I don't have that big a plot of land. So a colleague called and said, there's this opportunity at the Neon Museum. Would you like me to introduce you to Aaron Berger, who is the executive director? So I said, okay, sure. Went and visited with Aaron and talked to him and kind of got a sense of him coming from outside of Las Vegas and bringing a fresh perspective on preservation and historical stories. I mean, we were really trying to tell stories and catalog the stories of Las Vegas. That was really exciting for me. And I thought, okay, I can make a difference here. I can do something different, especially since I really love the history of Las Vegas.
It sounds like, and I know just from the conversations we have, that something that fulfills you is way more important to you and has way more value than money. That's just something I realized. And so I can see why the Neon Museum would draw your attention. Plus, it's a new challenge. And I think you like challenges.
I do. I love challenges. I love to be challenged in what we're doing. And being able to bring these stories to light. I mean, we use light instead of life, but because of the neon and the argon and all the gases that are used. But it was very exciting to have this challenge behind me and in front of me as well. We look at the things that we preserve, things that we bring back to life, and getting folks to be really engaged with us on mm-hmm. wanting to restore signs or preserve signs or tell their stories even.
Yeah, I think that the storytelling part is what's most important. When I first even thought twice about the Neon Museum was class I was involved in on creativity and aging. And I thought it was so important because in my studies and the programs I do, I deal a lot in creativity and aging. It makes a big difference as you age to delve back into your life and see those moments when you were creative. What were you doing? Are those things you can bring to the present that will help you in your aging experience? And that's why so many seniors love the Neon Museum. What's your take on that? What do you personally think the Neon Museum might mean to somebody older?
That brings back a lot of memories, I think, is really in the forefront. You can visit the museum and give your own tour and understand that I may have been part of the Riviera or I may have been part of the Stardust, and here's a sign and here's a story I can tell. But I think it elicits a lot of memories from the people that visit it, and especially seniors as they age, but they can think back on those stories, what they were doing in 1960 or 1970 80, whatever, however we identify a senior nowadays.
Right.
But there's those stories that come back to you and you go, oh my goodness, I remember that. And maybe you had a favorite pet or a family member who was part of what you were doing at that time. So it's great for you to relive those memories there.
The best thing about the Neon Museum is it's in perpetuity. I mean, it will always have a new sign for that generation that might be visiting, because, you know, I don't know if you guys are going to expand, but this boneyard is just getting filled up with bones. And so I think that's the thing about it. And plus, like you said, storytelling, to be able to take your grandchildren out there and say, I was, you know, a waitress in that place. Oh, I was a dealer in that place. I mean, it just offers a way for you to open up the communications between the generations as well. A little trip through there. Like, he is so thrilled that you acknowledge that's a Sahara sign. Ron Garrett, he was like, oh, wow, that's so cool. I told him about it. And so, you know, just right there, you have a person who actually took the sign from the Sahara and took it to the boneyard. And I just think that those kinds of stories and things like that, that bring back memories, and especially in a generation in my age group where many of these people have worked in those places. So I think it's fantastic. But, you know, overall, I mean, you're, may I ask your age?
63
people. We're looking at
happy 60, at 63.
Happy at 63. You know, I think the thing about it is people have to own aging, stop running from aging, and embrace it. It's such a better experience. And you and I were talking about embracing aging and lifestyle and things like that. And you've really created an amazing life for yourself. Like you said, you're going to retire, but then you saw something sparkly over there and you said, ooh, let me go try that out. But I was reading that you... Now, tell me about this garden. This is an award-winning garden at your house?
Well, not necessarily award-winning, but I worked with a local horticulture group to build an oasis for myself, a desert oasis, because I loved the garden. But I didn't want anything that was going to take a whole lot of time.
Is it at your house?
It is at my house, yeah. It's just, I want a little small lot and a little subdivision oh my goodness, I probably have 60 or 70 different varieties of plants within the yard. And I continue to add more as the days go by. I always find another plant that I want, and I can stuff another plant here, and always having to look for that pathway so I can make sure I can get behind the cactus or the ocotillo or something to do that work. But it's been very, very exciting for me. So go ahead.
Do people like to come in? I mean, do you allow people to come and tour it, I guess?
No, just my neighbors. My neighbors come by once in a while and take a look, and I give them some plants and as we propagate. But I'm always looking for that next exciting new plant from the Mojave Desert, although I've been branching out a little bit to other deserts, and because I'm running out of – I think I've gotten – quite a few Mojave natives in there.
Well, not to drag it on, but I just find it interesting. So with these various plants, are you documenting them? Like, do you have their name? I mean, what is it about them that makes them so unique?
I do. I keep a complete binder of every species that I have in the yard, and understand when they bloom and what their needs are, how much water they're going to need, and what I can do to prune them, and you know, do you need a hard prune or don't touch them, or how temperamental they're going to be. I'm a big advocate of adding seeds to my yard. So there's many reputable seed collectors that are licensed to gather seeds. And so I'll collect seeds and throw them in the yard and hope they grow.
Wow.
Just because that would be the natural life cycle. Yeah. They would blow into somebody's area and they would grow or not. So I see some grow, and 4 or 5 years later, something else will pop up that I planted. I go, oh, okay, it's doing its thing.
That sounds so much
it's
fun.
Fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can't wait to see it personally. I mean, when you use that word oasis, you know, I'm expecting to see an oasis.
It is like that.
Not that I'm sure I even know what an oasis is, but I want to see one. So, okay. So I know we were talking about, you know, retiring, which is something I think we share that you and I may never really do, just because, you know, I see that sparkly thing and there I go. It's like, ooh, I could do that, you know, and that's a real challenge for me. But you do have some plans. I mean, you and your husband, Rob, you plan on retiring in Italy.
That is the plan, ooh. Pat. We are working towards retirement in Italy, somewhere in the Tuscany region, where my family came from. My grandfather and his sister and his brother migrated in around 1919, 1920 to the northern Nevada area. And they one of their brothers remained behind. So there's still a branch of the family that lives there. And we've been reconnecting with them over the years and getting to know that part of the family, that side of the family, mm-hmm. and how they're living there. But I think for me, it's more about returning to those roots and understanding what was driving my grandfather and his sister and brother to move. What happened in 1919? I mean, we all know what happened in 1919, yeah. What was going on, but how did that impact their family? How did it impact the brother Domenico who stayed behind? How did they all interact and react to that changing time? Mm-hmm. I want to know more about that. Mm-hmm. And really get to really connect into those areas where that family was.
And being able to go back there and immerse yourself in the culture that you grew up in. And, you know, I'm just very jealous about it. But, I mean, what a way to retire and to fulfill. I mean, I guess you'll go out there and you'll do some kind of an Italian garden or something. You're going
to
find
so tomatoes and torpedo onions. That's exactly what I'll be growing. So
so you already got it all
planned. I already have it all planned, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That is so funny. Well, you know, I want to ask you, and I would ask every guest this, how do you see the next 5 years? I know you want to retire, but again, with you being just so well, and I'm hopefully not going out on a limb, but so loved here, and your talent being so necessary here as we grow and shift. What do you see the next 5 years doing for you?
Well, my intention is to stick around with the Neon Museum as we grow the product and the offering and bring more science to light. And I think that's exciting for me. There's something about the history of Las Vegas that drives me to want to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, even that was part of, in the casino world, it was part of the history, but I think this is a different side of history. This is the side that no one seems to think we save. Because, right, Las Vegas blows things up and then we move on, but that's not what we're doing. We're out there talking to the people at the Tropicana, talking to the people at the Mirage, and trying to get those artifacts in the ephemera and the stories that really have been part of Las Vegas, yeah. and to catalog those. So that in itself is something that I want to continue to do. Yeah. As we make plans, I mean, it's not that easy just to say I'm going to retire to Italy and go. There are hoops and things you have to jump through to get to that point.
Yeah, but you made it sound so easy. Yeah, I was ooh, I'm going to Tuscany too, you know?
It's not as difficult, but it can. There are some challenges. Yeah. They're casual.
Yeah.
Their government is, I will say casual. I mean, that's a broad brush term, but it takes some time to get things done.
Yeah.
It does.
Well, tell me what's going to happen at the Neon Museum that we all cannot miss.
Geez. Well, we have just removed pieces of the flamingo sign that are in the collection. So we had three very big a piece of a pylon sign and two plumes that were all from separate signs, and we have three donors actually who've committed to restoring that sign. So it moved from the museum about a month ago to Hartlauer Signs, where it's being restored, and we're going to re-illuminate that in May.
So donors underwrite the refurbishing or whatever
they do. Yeah.
Okay.
We're a 501c3.
Okay.
So we rely mainly on donors and folks that want to sponsor a sign or bring a sign back to life for whatever reason that is. Mm-hmm. Some are anonymous and some are public, and that's what we rely on. So we are currently at 25 fully re-illuminated signs within the space, and we hope to have, you know, 50 or so soon. I mean, soon is a relative term, but it takes a while. But there's lots of pieces that need love and attention, and we're working towards that.
What a fun job.
It is a fun job.
To just go out and kind of find those pieces. And you know, Mike, it's just been such a joy. I came out of nowhere. I said, hey, come be on my show. And you were just so gracious and willing to come.
I'm glad I could do the show, Pat.
Wish your career.
There's a lot of positive. We are aging, not gracefully, but we're aging, and it's a positive experience. I don't ever like that term, aging gracefully, because I don't know what that is.
We're just aging.
We're aging, but I'm doing it in a way that I want to do it.
Well, like I always say, aging is living. For those of you who are out there kicking and screaming and avoiding it, guess what the alternative is? Aging is living. So let's get to living out there. I want to thank you, Mike, for coming and sharing this time with me. There's more information available about me and what I do at patlandacreagency.com. It's been a pleasure again. And I will see all of you on the next There's No Aging in Vegas, where I'm just teaching what I'm preaching, baby. Okay.